announcements that this month we are learning the books of the Bible together. So come on up, don't be afraid. Come on down. Cecilia, I know you would not be afraid. Come on down here. We're going to prove that the people of the church probably not 100% know all the books of the Bible either. As a matter of fact, maybe I will have trouble reciting all the books of the Bible. So together, collectively, we're going to try to figure this out. And we're going to say the books of the Bible together. So how many books of the Bible are there all together? Does anybody know? Jordan, you know?
65
plus 1. 66. All right, so how many books are there?
66.
So it's 66 books, and they're broken up into two testaments, an Old Testament and a New Testament. Do you remember how many are in the Old Testament? There's more in that one. Does anybody remember? Remember? 10, no. Clementine, you know? 36 close. We're working on our addition to 36 plus 3 is
38.
39. Julia's just showing off. 39. So there's 39 books in the Old Testament, which means there are how many in the New? 27. So there's 27. So let's work on the first 39. All right. Let's see if we can do the first 39. Clark's close. Anybody know them all? Do you guys? Anybody know them all yet? There's some good stuff on the line from Angie, so we got to work on this. Claire knows them all in the back, but we're not going to call her out. We don't want to embarrass her. Because I know, you know them all when you're back there with your dad, but when you come up in front, it gets nervous and you forget and stuff. But so the first one, what's the first book? That's the easy one. First book in the whole Bible. Genesis. All right, so we start in Genesis, and then we have Exodus, and then we have Leviticus. Now look at all the people out there taking notes so they can note without forget. Ethel used to remember, but she's forgotten, so she's writing them down. So we have Genesis and Exodus, and then the funny sounded one, Leviticus.
Numbers.
Deuteronomy, Joshua, Judges, Curtis, Ruth, 1st and 2nd Samuel, then the Kings, then 1st and 2nd Chronicles. Now it gets tricky, right? Ezra, Nehemiah, Esther, Job, Psalms, Proverbs, it's 39, Ecclesiastes, Song of Solomon. Now watch what happens. What comes? Isaiah, Jeremiah, Lamentations, Ezekiel. These are the books you've probably never even heard of. Daniel, Hosea, Joel, Amos,
Obadiah?
Obadiah, Jonah, Micah, Nahum. Wait, say that one together. That one's a fun one. Habakkuk. That's a book in the Bible? Who knew? Habakkuk was in the Bible. Okay, what's that? Now I messed this all up. We had a good rhythm. Okay, Habakkuk. Zephaniah's first, right? Come on, Ruth. You're messing the whole thing up. You're the only one speaking up. Everybody else is like, minor prophets, I'm out. That's right. Zephaniah, Haggai, Zechariah, Malachi. Everybody else Malachi, right? Yes! All right. So now we do the New Testament. We'll do this a little faster. Maybe. All right. I was going to say, let's see if we don't sing the song, if we still know. All right, Matthew, Mark, Luke, John, right? You know those four. Those are easy ones. Matthew, Mark, Luke, John, Acts, Romans, 1st and 2nd Corinthians, Galatians, Ephesians, Philippians, Colossians, 1st and 2nd Thessalonians. Nobody ever reads that one. 1st and 2nd Timothy, Titus, Philemon, Hebrews, James, 1st, 2nd Peter, Kurtz. We forgot the 1st, 2nd, 3rd John, Jude. What's the last one? You guys know the last book of the Bible, Genesis, all the way to Revelation. You're gonna go out and learn these this morning. You'll be able to come back on. All right, we're working on those. Good job, everybody. Let's go ahead. You guys are gonna head out with Angie and Lacey. It's cool that we are working on that, and Angie's working hard, and there's all kinds of bits to help out with. Violet's going to come up and help out this morning. Let's do it. It's great that Angie's working on these with us because it fits really well into what we're going to be doing the next couple of weeks. So as we discussed from the front this morning, there are 66 books in the Bible. heard of a seminary professor who said that he had hoped that his seminary students would graduate equipped with a 66-book canon. Where's Chris at? That's the best pun I got, man. The 66-book canon. Canon of Scripture, but also the canon to blow people away. Not really blow people away. But the idea is that there are 66 books of the Bible. And all books are not created equal. But the fact that those 66 books have withstood the test of time, that they have been the one through centuries and centuries of church history that have been passed down to us as fairly passive recipients. We didn't do anything. We didn't get a vote. Nobody said, oh, you're a member of the Elm Creek Church now, John Hutchinson. Which books would you think should be included and which ones aren't? It's just that's just the tradition that we have been gifted. And if you were with us in our Sunday morning class the last couple weeks, we've been talking a little bit about this, and we talked about the Apocrypha a little bit. And even churches that acknowledge the Apocrypha still give a little bit more credence to the 66. That there's something about those books of the Bible which are significant. And some of those books we spend lots of time in. What's your favorite book? Just if you had to pick one that's my favorite. What's some of the ones? Ruth. It's a softball. Ruth?
Yeah. Luke.
Is this one funny? Anybody else? What are some of the favorite books? Judges. Of course. Ephesians. Psalms. Everybody loves the Psalms, right? Psalms. I mean, we spend more time in some of these books. I would have been shocked if somebody said, Zephaniah. I love the book of Zephaniah. I like, when I do wedding ceremonies, a lot of times I'll read some of the verses from Song of Solomon, and then I'll say, because most of the time, a lot of people don't go to church there, I'll say, or a lot of people do go to church but don't read the Bible, I'll say, how many of you knew that was even in the Bible, some of the things that are in the Song of Solomon? Again, if somebody had said, I love the book of Song of Solomon, we would have probably all done an awkward, oh, that's great. There's 66 books of the Bible. We certainly spend more time. Now, Matthew, Mark, Luke, and John, the four Gospels, seem to be crucial. And so while we'll say that there's 66 and there's the entire Bible and we got it all bonded leather and gold-tipped and all that kind of stuff, or in our phones, you know, whatever works now. But I don't know that we would ever say that all 66 books are equal. Like, if we had to get rid of a book, I'm not getting rid of a Gospel. I could probably live without Obadiah. I mean, that probably would be okay if we got rid of some of those books. And I'm not saying we should, but I'm just saying they're not as significant as some of the books that carry on the story. Think about the Old Testament. If we lost Genesis, what would we lose? My goodness, we would lose so much. If we lost Haggai, we would just lose one of the more difficult books to remember in the list of all those minor prophets at the end. So what are we talking about this morning? Why are we going through all this stuff? Well, here's my kind of philosophy. I think that as a church, as a local church, we should cover the corpus of Scripture. We should cover the entirety of Scripture every 5 years or so. We should be on kind of a five-year cycle or plan or so, so that every 5 years we're reading the entire Bible. Now, over the course of 5 years, I'm assuming that we're going to study the Gospels the most. More often, we're going to spend more time probably in the New Testament than in the Old, but we're still going to find time for other New Testament books that aren't a gospel. We're still going to find time in the Old Testament to cover some of the books that maybe we haven't covered in a while. And we'll do that through our sermonizing time and our Sunday morning worship time, but we'll also do that through our classes and things. And I say all this because we're kind of closing in, and maybe subtly, and you didn't even realize, but over the last 5 years, we've covered just about all of it. We really have. There are some loose ends, and we're going to kind of work through the loose ends over the next couple of weeks, which is going to be kind of weird, because we're going to be covering books of the Bible that you probably haven't spent a lot of time in. The next couple of weeks are going to be spent in the New Testament and some of the more obscure books of the New Testament. And one of the reasons why they're a little bit more obscure and we don't spend as much time with them is because the message isn't quite as central, that's the right word. It's not quite as clear at sometimes. Next week, if you want to kind of beginning a course across the next week, to prepare for our message next week, we're going to be looking at the book of Jude. There's some weird stuff in the book of Jude. And so there's some great stuff. And obviously, what we're looking through all of our studies of all of the books is what is this book, what is this experience teaching us about the nature of God? What can we learn about God by studying Amos or Obadiah or Jude or 2 John? What is it teaching us? I mean, the message is clear in Matthew and Mark and Luke and John and Acts and Romans and Genesis and Exodus and some of those books that we spend a lot of time on. But what about some of these other books? And so beginning this morning, and it's not maybe going to flow super well, so you might be like, man, I feel like we're kind of getting jerked over. But what we're going to do is we're going to kind of jerk around through the scriptures and just let them kind of lead us and see what they say. This morning we're going to start in the book of 2 John. Now we started with 1 John, and we spent a good 8 weeks in 1 John. 1 John is a book that I would not say is a real neglected book. That's one that we do spend a lot of time in. We talk about, you know, those great passages about how I want to be in the light as he is in the light, and about that contrast of lightness and darkness, and even from our message last week, the idea that we have a security and certainty of knowing that we're part of God's family. Some of those things come up in 2 John, but it's a little bit more personal, and that's what we're going to find out about the letters of 2 and 3 John. Now, 1 John is a little bit longer, and if you've studied the New Testament, you know that the New Testament's comprised of several, what we call them epistles, letters. But they think that 2 and 3 John are actually more traditional as far as the length of a letter. This is more of a typical letter of the time, because it's about the length of a piece of papyrus. The other letters were much, much longer, but they were more specific to some occasions which probably weren't usual. Instead, what we have here is some mail. We're just kind of reading somebody's mail who is significant in the early church. And so it's unusual. It's very short, 13 verses. That's the entire book. So if nothing else, we'll leave today and go, yeah, we read two books of the Bible together. It was great. Don't know what else he said, but we read the books of the Bible. So let's start with 2 John. The elder. And this is always backwards when you read these letters, because we always sign our letters at the end. They sign theirs at the beginning. Which makes sense if you think about it, because when you get a letter in the mail, and I know you young people, letters are these things that were on paper and that people would like write with these things called pens, and it doesn't happen a lot anymore, but when you would get one of those in the mail, well, the first thing you would do, especially if it was in an envelope that didn't have a return address on it, you would look down at the end to see who it was from. They were smarter than us. They said, let's just put that word first. And so this is from the elder to the chosen lady and her children. To the chosen lady, whoever in the world that is. Now, this might have been a specific woman, or it may have been kind of a metaphor for a specific church. Either one. There's really no way to tell. But the metaphor would have held true to some of the other uses that John has. So he's either writing to a church or a specific woman, and it's from the elder, and it's to the chosen lady and her children whom I love in the truth. And not I only, but also all who know the truth. Because of the truth which lives in us and will be with us forever. So, two verses in, what do you think is a big deal in this letter? Maybe truth, since it's there three times. And we saw that in 1 John, remember? Truth and love were kind of the centerpieces of what John is addressing. You got to love each other, and you got to make sure that you stay away from false teachers and stay committed to the truth, right? That was kind of the background of 1 John. He picks right up on that in this letter as well. There's a greeting in verse 3. Grace, mercy, and peace from God the Father and from Jesus Christ the Father's Son will be with us in truth and love. There are those two words again. John's like, hello, you got it yet? truth, love, they're kind of a big deal. Now we get into the specifics of this letter. It has given me great joy to find some of your children walking in the truth just as the Father commanded us. And now, dear lady, I'm not writing you a new command, but one that we have had from the beginning. I ask that we love one another. And this is love, that we walk in obedience to his commands. As you have heard from the beginning, his command is that you walk in love. Everything that I just read sounds exactly like what he wrote in 1 John. You guys got to love each other. Loving God looks like loving each other and keeping up and maintaining his commandments. And then he gets into some of the specifics here in verse 7. Many deceivers who do not acknowledge Jesus Christ as coming into the flesh have gone out into the world. Any such person is the deceiver and the antichrist. Watch out that you do not lose what you have worked for, but that you may be rewarded fully. Anyone who runs ahead and does not continue in the teaching of Christ does not have God. Whoever continues in the teaching has both the Father and the Son. If anyone comes to you and does not bring this teaching, don't take him into your house or welcome him. Anyone who welcomes him shares in his wicked work. I have much to write to you, but I do not want to use paper and ink. Instead, I hope to visit you and talk with you face to face, so that our joy may be complete. The children of your chosen sister send their greetings. And he drops the mic. That's it. That's the entire book. We just read the entire book in like 2 minutes. Imagine if the whole Bible was this way. It was just like a bunch of blog entries. But there's just a few of these books, and they're very personal. And this one in particular is kind of unusual, I think. It's kind of interesting because there's something there that we may be surprised a little bit. He talks all about truth and all about love, and that's kind of the standards that we uphold here. Now, what is truth? In the context of 2 John, in the context of 1 John, truth was simply Jesus Christ and Him crucified, and He came from God. That's it. We talked about that last week. That's all it was. And he picks up on it again, and I think it's important to realize this, that there are deceivers among us, is what he's saying. There are people that were coming, and I've kind of talked about how this is kind of informing all of the letters from John. There were these false teachers that were emerging at the very early stages of the church, and they're all trying to figure out, do we follow them, do we follow him, do we follow her, who do we follow? And so John comes along and he writes these letters and says, look, whoever's preaching Christ and him crucified, they're all right by us. Those are our people. Those are the people you can have confidence in. Goes back to the confidence stuff we talked about last week. You can know that they represent truth based on their message that Christ and him crucified. However, what 2 John says is not everybody's like it. Not everybody is preaching Christ is from God. And he calls them two things which are fairly significant, fairly caustic, really. He calls them deceivers and he calls them antichrist. Now, those are two things I don't think any of us would want to be called, and we live in this kind of hyper PC day where it's really not okay to ever judge anybody or say anything like that at all. And what this letter does is it reminds us that there is a line, that there is a line of fellowship between us and those who are Christians and those who are not Christians. And what that line is, and I don't want to beat a dead horse, but it's the same message that comes up again in 2 John that came up in 1 John. The line is Jesus Christ being from God, believing that he's the Savior. That's the line. That's what marks somebody from as part of the church and somebody who wasn't as part of the church. And John is saying, it becomes an issue when someone comes on my behalf, speaking of Christ, when they come on Christ's behalf, and they say they're speaking on Christ's behalf, but they deny his resurrection. They deny that he's from God. John says, that's an issue. And those are the people that you need to withdraw from. Those are the people that you can't even welcome into your house. Now, how not like Jesus does that sound? Well, you don't let them come into your house. And John says, no, you can't let them into your house because they are working on a deceptive message, on a message that isn't from God, it isn't from Christ, and we don't want to perpetuate that. And so that seems to be the first message from that text. The second principle, I think, is a little bit more difficult to sell, and that is the fact that there is a divide. That there is a division between those who are saved, those who admonish Christ, and those who don't. That was interesting because we aren't to be belligerent. We aren't to be fighting about these differences. John doesn't say, yeah, don't let them into your house and go beat them up. Or go, burn their house, or anything like that. And I think sometimes Christians give that mentality off. What was this message about? Again, there are two things, two sides to the rail here. Truth and love, right? What's the truth? The truth is Jesus Christ and Him crucified. So if you go out and you want to debate or discuss or talk to somebody who doesn't believe in that, what do you have to be afraid of? If you believe it's the truth, I'm not afraid of the truth. And we may be thinking, well, I don't want to be shown up, or I don't want to do this, or I don't want to do that. We are certainly empowered to have conversations with those who disagree with us and whom we disagree with. We can learn a lot from them. We can exchange ideas. They can help us understand God and see God better. There's no doubt in my mind. But when it comes to lines of fellowship, when it comes to lines of who's a part of the church, the global universal church, those who profess Christ, that's what 2 John teaches us and helps us understand. If you're preaching Christ and you're preaching Him crucified, then you're a brother or sister in Christ. Now, there's a lot of people who preach a lot of things that I think are bunk, that are bad, that are not helpful, that are even destructive to the church. But what 2 John says, but here's the beginning place. If they're preaching Christ and Him crucified, they're not a false teacher. They're not someone who is a heretic, that H word that we like to throw around. See, in Christian circles of the last several hundred years, we've decided that anybody who disagrees with us is on the border of being a heretic, regardless of what they disagree with us about. Now, it's interesting that he follows up, I don't know which letter came first, but 3 John kind of speaks to the same situation, similarly, but there's a little bit of difference in there. And so we're going to kind of change gears for a second, but let's look at 3 John. We're going to knock two of these books out in a day. So we've only got 64 left. If only they were all this short, right? You could do this quickly. So 3 John, kind of a similar situation, very personal. The elder, again, from the elder to my dear friend Gaius, whom I love in the truth. There's that word again. Dear friend, I pray that you may enjoy good health and that all may go well with you, even as your soul is getting along with you, or is getting along well. It gave me great joy to have some brothers come and tell about your faithfulness to the truth and how you continue to walk in the truth. I have no greater joy than to hear that my children are walking in the truth. There's that word again several times. Dear friends, you are faithful in what you're doing for the brothers, even though they are strangers to you. They have told the church about your love. You will do well to send them on their way in the manner worthy of God. Now notice the difference. In 2 John, don't let those people in your house. Don't give them any hospitality. In 3 John, hey, you do well to welcome them, even though you don't know them. They're complete strangers. Send them out well in the name of the Lord. It was for the sake of the name that they went out, receiving no help from the pagans. We ought therefore to show hospitality to such men, so that we may work together for the truth. I wrote to the church about Diotrephes, who loves to be first, but will have nothing to do with us. So if I come, I will call attention to what he's doing, gossiping maliciously about us. Not satisfied with that, he refuses to welcome the brothers. He also stops those who want to do so and puts them out of the church. Dear friends, do not imitate what is evil, but what is good. Anyone who does what's good is from God. Anybody who does evil is not seen God. Demetrius is well spoken of by everyone, and even by the truth itself. We also speak well of him, and you know that our testimony is true. I have much to write to you, but I do not want to do so with pen and ink. I hope to see you soon. We'll talk face to face. Peace to you. The friends here send their greetings. Greet the friends there by name. And he drops the mic again. That's it. That's all it was. Two really short, brief letters. There's actually more verses in 3 John, but there are fewer words. And so these are both very short, simple letters with pretty much a pretty simple bit. It may be a little bit of a stretch, but I think as we look at our world today, the world of our church and the church in the world today, we don't have as many of these kind of itinerant preachers that would just kind of travel around and kind of support them. And that's kind of what was going on in the world at this time, is they were having people who were just simply relying on the goodwill of local churches to come and share the good news. And John commends them in that. He says, hey, when you have people that are coming in truth, you need to help them, support them, be there for them. And it's something I think is an important message for us in this church, at Allen Creek Church. I think it's something we could do better in. It's probably just a byproduct of the American consumer culture that we live in, and we're just kind of all caught up in ourselves, right? I mean, we just have to admit that. We're just caught up in ourselves. And even on a bigger scale, when we do think about the church, we're probably caught up with our church and what we're doing. And I think what 3 John does is it teaches us to remember that there's a lot of people in our world right now involved in ministry on behalf of the church. I was thinking about our friends Jason and Jamie, who are in Africa right now, kind of getting settled into their ministry product, their presence in the community there. And I was thinking about how, you know, we have a responsibility to the people that we come in contact with through our lives, who feel compelled to be involved in different ministry projects. And it doesn't have to be overseas, but just people who are working in the name of the Lord, and they're doing things that we are not able to do. And what 3 John reminds us for is you have a responsibility to send them help. Send them prayers. Send them money. Whatever we can to send our resources, and let's share that outside of ourselves. That becomes important. And what these two letters remind us is that there are people who are worthy of our help and support, and there are people who are not. And so there's discernment that is involved. But most of the people that I come in contact are out there, and they're preaching the gospel. And if they're preaching the gospel, John says, you need to show them hospitality and do what you can to be helpful and connect with them. I think as a church, we can do better. We send money to India, and there's some preachers there who we haven't had contact with in a really long time. I mean, they still check in with us, but as far as like direct contact, and we just have to kind of rely on the Spirit of God. God is there, and His presence is felt there, and somehow we have this small place or this small role in that place and the ministry that's happening there. It goes back to what we talked about a few weeks ago, and just trusting the Spirit, but being aware and cognizant of the Spirit, that the Spirit is alive much beyond the borders of what we can see, feel, and hear. I think the question that kind of resonates with me, and hopefully to you too, it's who are those who I need to for the sake of in verse 6, who we would do well to send them on their way in the manner worthy of God. Who is that? Who are the people that are relying on our hospitality, whether it's opening our home, and again, I don't know that translates super well to today, but that we're able to show hospitality with our gifts and our offerings, that their work can continue. And then there are these two dudes who show up, and I think it's interesting. Old Diotrephes sounds like a pretty stellar guy, right? What does he say about him? He loves to be first. Like, you imagine, like, hey, this is my friend Mike Schreiber. He loves to be first. It's like not a becoming thing to say about somebody. But I think it's interesting that he talks about Diotrephes, because what he doesn't say about Diotrephes is that he's an antichrist or a false teacher. He's not that. Even though he's a bad guy, he's a schmuck, whatever you want to say about him. He's full of himself. He's kind of a jerk. He's kind of not the guy that you want in charge of your church or leading your church. And John's got some serious words for him, and he's got some rebuking to do, but it's a different tone than the previous letter. And so I think it's kind of a window. It's like a crack of a window that we can see a little bit of the situation in the early church and how things were developing and the accountability that would come from the outside. Sometimes I think that's one of the challenges that churches like ours have, is we're autonomous, and so we don't really answer to anybody. But that's not always a good thing. Sometimes it's nice to have somebody come from the outside. Those of you who work for companies can probably appreciate this. Sometimes it's good to have the consultant come out and say, what the heck are you guys doing? And that's basically what John was saying. I had to go over there and say, what are you doing, Diotrephes? You bummer, you know? And then not just to him, but to all the other people, and say, hey, this guy isn't representing Christ well. He's preaching him, apparently, but he's not representing him. And then I love the fact that he lays out Diotrephes, and he says, now let me tell you about Demetrius. Now this guy, he's the guy you want leading the church. And he goes on to kind of encourage him. And I know that this is all kind of like all over the place, because that's kind of where the letter is. And it's like if we left the church building this morning and somebody was hanging out in our parking lot this week and drops a letter on the ground, and we pick it up and we're trying to figure out who they were writing to. And that's kind of what this is, and that's why it's so difficult when they're so personal, these letters are, that you're trying to kind of put the pieces together. But one of the things, and I felt like this was kind of a good way to end the discussion about these two letters, is throughout these two letters, and you can include others, but especially these two letters, there are people involved everywhere. And that seems like such an obvious statement to make, but really stop and think about it for a second, okay? 2 John was written to, and if it was a specific woman, the beloved lady, or if it was a specific church, it's written to a specific organization. And it's one of the reasons why this is a little bit difficult for us to understand, because it wasn't written to us, it was written to the beloved lady. But there are specific people involved. There are these missionaries that are involved in this conversation about hospitality and bringing them into your home and taking care of them. And then the next letter is written to a guy named Gaius. And he mentions two people specifically, Diotrephes and Demetrius. And it's interesting to me because it reminds me, and it reminds, I think, all of us, that we're about people. Like, that's what we're about as Christians, as human beings. We're about people. And sometimes it's easy to forget that. And one of the ways that's great to illustrate this is the way that we dehumanize people, and it happens every time you watch a sporting event. Because all of a sudden, those aren't people anymore. They put a color on, and they're a team, and it's either your team, and all of a sudden your team can do no wrong, or it's the other team, and you hope that they blow up. Or not like blow up, but at least do really badly, right? And it's interesting because that's how we are about all of our lives. We label each other politically. Like, you can see this work out sometimes on these pundits on TVs. Is they're trying to get people to say a tag word or something so that they can label them, and once they're labeled, they're done. They're dehumanized. They're done. It's no longer whoever. It's that liberal or that conservative or that old fogey or whatever it is. We do it all the time, and probably where we have a tendency to do it maybe most often is in church. We talk about somebody being super open-minded or super closed-minded. We talk about the elderly or the old people or the senior citizens, or we talk about the young folks or the kids or whatever it is. And we label them, or us, we label ourselves as if that's all encompassing. And one of the things that I found, and I was kind of surprised, I guess, to find this message coming out of these letters, but I think it's true, is it reminds us that each individual person is made in the image of God. And each individual person, each one of us, has a role in this thing that we call church and we call faith. And that each one of us are equal, and each one of us need each other, and each one of us are significant. And really, what measures our health as a local church, as a local congregation, is how well we do those relationships. How well? I mean, you could just kind of look around this morning and go, the health of our church is largely dependent on how well our relationships are together. And let me tell you something, being in a metropolitan area of a suburban sprawl where we all live all over creation, this is not easy to do. It's not easy to do real relationships. But that, and I've said this before, that's what separates us from everybody else. Is because most of the people that I know who don't know Jesus, they don't do relationships very well. Because our culture teaches us to be very superficial, yes and no, and smile, and put good pictures on Facebook and make everybody think that your life is just great. And we know there's some smell underneath the surface, but, you know, that's your smell, and you just kind of deal with it on your own. And the radical nature of the church is we come together on Sundays and we go, we don't do that. Like, we're jacked up. All of us are just messed up, and we're different, and we're weird, and we love each other despite of our differences. We love each other in spite of all the things that try to work to divide us. And the only way that truly works is if we know each other and if we care about each other and we take time to be together. And so I want to challenge you over the next couple of weeks. And this comes, I really do think, right out of 2nd, 3rd John. If we were to write letters to another church, a sister church, about our church, what were the things that we'd say? Well, part of my challenge is over the next couple of weeks is, just think about some of the people that are here at this church. Who can you encourage this week? Who can you relate to this week? Who can you do a better job of connecting to? You know, one of the things I love that we do each week is we just kind of remind ourselves through our announcements and our kind of family time of who needs some prayers, and we share good news and we share bad news. And I admit, sometimes it's difficult to remember all that stuff as we go on. Well, this week, don't remember all of it. Just remember one person or one thing that was shared. consider some of the other people here who maybe need encouragement. Maybe some of the people who haven't been around as long as you have. How can you kind of help bring them in and be part of this wonderful, glorious patchwork of people that we call the Allen Creek Church? I think it's a good reminder as we close. It was a good reminder for me as I sat listening to Hope this morning, and I thought, Hope, you are such a treasure of our church. You are truly just a treasure of our church. And I thought, so is everybody else. You know, you don't have as many stories to tell because I don't think anybody's quite as old as Hope. But everybody is a treasure here. And what's unfortunate is sometimes we get caught up in our own lives so much that we forget that. We don't take time to learn that. And there are people sitting around you this morning who just have an amazing treasure that can help you and encourage you. And unless you take the time to begin to foster that relationship a little bit. And I know it's difficult. Like, I get it. You're busy. I'm busy. There's a lot of stuff going on. But it only happens if you make it happen. And so this week, as we kind of close this morning, make it happen. Just do something to make it happen. That's all I got. Next week, read Jude.